Morning. Today's daf and Shavuos is Chav Zayin. We start in the Mishnah, the very top of the Amud. Turn our attention to a new type of Shavuos Bitui, and that's Shavuos Bitui and a mitzvah. Shavuos Bitui, I make a declaration about something that I'm either going to do something or abstain from doing something. So that is a binding Shavua. And if I do not fulfill the Shavua, if I go against the Shavua, so then I'm going to be chayv, and I do so b'shogeg, meaning at the time I forgot about my shvua, so I'm eligible to now bring a carbon olav yared, it's a type of carbon chatas, in order to be mechaper. So that is a general idea of shvuos bitui, which we've been discussing extensively now since the beginning of this parak. The mission over here now is going to describe a scenario in which I make a shvua on either something which I'm already bound to do, otherwise known as a mitzvah, or something which I'm already prohibited from doing, which is what we would refer to as a lav, an avera. So under those circumstances, is such a shvua going to be binding? So the answer is going to be no. You could discuss the issue of whether or not it would fall under the category of a shvua shav, meaning that if the Torah already tells me to do something, and I sit there and I say I'm going to do the mitzvah, okay, that's very nice. Very happy for you that you're so insistent you're going to do the mitzvah, but I got news for you. You're already obligated to do so. You didn't really make a contribution to the discussion. Or, for example, if there's an avera in the Torah, and I say, oh, I'm not going to eat that treif. Okay, good. I swear I'm not going to eat that treif. That's very nice. I'm happy that you are so gung-ho about it. But again, you didn't really make a contribution to the discussion. In other words, you already were bound by nisr not to eat it. So what was that shua? So ostensibly it's a shua shav. So that is not our discussion, meaning it's part of, let me say it better. It's part of our discussion for today, but the Gemara is not going to entertain it at all. And what you could do, and Tosa seems to do this, is make a distinction whether or not you are incentivizing yourself to do a mitzvah or not to do an avera where there, if you're incentivizing, so you are making a contribution. Meaning it's not a shua shav because it's an incentive. If, on the other hand, you're making a shua where I'm going to eat treif, so there it's mamash and avera. You shouldn't be making such a statement. It's, so maybe there would be a shua shav. Okay. So all I'm saying for now is that the shua shav discussion is certainly on the table, but not today's table. It's on a different table. So, but today we're just talking about it from the perspective of Shavuos Bitui, and we're talking about it really from the very limited perspective of whether or not you're eligible to bring a carbon. That's really our discussion, as it has been since the beginning of the third parak. And so with that in mind, let's start with the Mishnah. Nishba levatos the mitzvah v'lo bitel. So let's say a person makes a shvua that he's going to be mevatos the mitzvah. That obviously is not a good thing. And v'lo bitel, but he is not mevatel pater, so then he would be exempt. Meaning the shvua is simply not going to be binding. L'kayim v'lo kiyem, or let's say he made a shvua that he's going to be mekayim a mitzvah. And he was not mekayim the mitzvah, so then he was going to, then pater. Then he's going to be, then even though he violated his shvua, but the shvua is not going to be, the shvua was never binding because it was going on a mitzvah, and so therefore he's not going to be chayv a carbon olav yared. Now, there is a Tana who says that you are going to be bound by that Shua, and that is Rav Yehuda ben Beserah, and the Gemara now goes through his argument. I'm Rav Yehuda ben Beserah, my Marishushin and Mushba Alav, Meharsina, Ari Chayv Alav. So if there's something which is optional, and I bind myself to do it through a Shua, and I don't do it, I'm going to be Chayv. So now, Mitzvah, Shu, Mushba Alav, Meharsina. So if I make a Shua on a Mitzvah, which I have to do anyway, so if I make a shvua on something that I have to do, and I'm bound to do it from Maimed Har Sinai, so Einu Din Shei Chayv Alaha. So now that I'm bound to do it, and coupled with the fact that it's a mitzvah, so now you'll say that for sure your shvua is going to be binding, and therefore failure to do the mitzvah now is not only a failure to do the mitzvah, but also it's a failure of your shvua. So therefore, it should for sure be binding, and therefore you should be chayv a carbon olav yari. This is the argument of Rav Yehuda ben Beserah. So Amr lo lo. So they say to him, no, simply no. Imamar b'shuos avishus. Shekein asa bo lav kehein. Tamar b'shuos mitzvah shlo asa bo lav kehein. Shem nishba lavato v'lo bita pater. So the Chachamim say back to Rav Yehuda ben Beserah, you know, the shua has to be flippable. That's something we just discussed over Shabbos. Right, and Shabbos is daf. You have to be able to reverse the shua. In other words, the shua is, let's say, for example, I'm going to eat matzah. The shvua cannot be flipped and say, I'm not going to eat matzah. I mean, I'm discussing Lo Seder. Right? The shvua can't be, I'm not going to eat matzah. You have no right to make such a shvua. So in other words, in order for a Shavua to be eligible and binding as a Shavua, you have to say both as the positive and you have to be able to say as the negative. That's the very definition of a Shavua. So the Chachamim say back to Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, your argument simply does not hold water. Because your argument is based on the fact that, well, if I'm bound by Shavua's service, I'm for sure bound by Shavua's mitzvah. The Chachamim's counter-argument is no. In other words, because by Shavua's mitzvah, you can't say the opposite. You can't say, I'm going to do it, plus you can't also say, I'm not going to do it. You're already ousted from doing so.
Is there a time limit to a Shavua?
Meaning?
He can say, I'm not going to do it today, I'm going to do it tomorrow, I'm going to do it the other day,
Right. In other words, if it's, let's say, for example, a Shavua, like he's going to eat something, right? So he has to do it. If he doesn't give himself a time limit, so he has to eat it before it's, it's no longer around. But, okay. So what do we have in our mission now? So in a p'tur of a, or I should say better, not binding Shavua that would go on a mitzvah, even though the mitzvah, obviously, you're bound to do, and you make a shvuah that you're going to do it. So this is not a binding shvuah. It does not have the status of a shvuah's bitui. If you don't do the mitzvah, you're not going to be chayav karbon olav yarein. So in other words, it's a patur, based on the fact that it's a mitzvah, and the Torah's chi of shvuah, and the Torah's chi of karbon on a shvuah is only on a shvuah's reshus, not a shvuah's mitzvah. We start with the Gemara Tan Rabbanan Yachol. Now this price over here is going to take us behind the scenes, meaning, How do the Chachamim know that you're going to be potter? Now, it's interesting because if I asked you the question after having learned the Mishnah, I think I have the right answer. Meaning, the Chachamim say you're going to be potter because in order for a Shavua to be Chal, in order for a Shavua to be Shavua, it has to be said both in the positive and the negative. The Brice over here seems to be giving somewhat of a different argument than that which we just saw in the Mishnah. Let's see the Brice together. Tanu Rabban. Yachon Nishma Levatos Mitzvah V'lo Bitel Yechayet. I might have thought that if my Shavua was to be mevato the mitzvah, to negate it, and I didn't negate it, so I should be chayiv now for my Shavua. I did violate my Shavua. Tam lamar, la ra la itiv. The Torah says either to do bad or good. Mahatava rishus, af hara'a rishus. The good mentioned in the Torah is something which is optional. The bad mentioned in the Torah is something which is optional. Otsi nishba levato the mitzvah v'lo bito shu pater. So that excludes somebody who is trying to negate by a Shavua to do a particular mitzvah, and he doesn't, and he doesn't do what he said he was going to do. So he's going to, under those circumstances, the Shavua is not going to be binding. Yachol, next part of the Braisa. Nishba lekayim is the mitzvah. What if a person makes a Shavua in which he binds himself to fulfill a mitzvah? Velo kiyem, and he doesn't fulfill the mitzvah, sheyechayev. Under those circumstances, he violated his Shavua, and therefore he should be chayev karbon olav yarid. Tamalam la rao leitiv, mahara rishus afata rishus. Just like haraz has to be a rishus, so too atava has to be a rishus. Otsi nishba lekayim is the mitzvah v'lokim sheyipater, and that excludes this case. Now, the question you should be asking at this point in time in the Braisa is kind of making a circular argument. The Gemara is saying, well, I know that the ra is rishus, so the hatava has to be rishus. And I know that the hatava has to be a rishus, so therefore the ra has to be a rishus. The argument, of course, is circular, meaning it's just based on the fact that the other one has to be a rishus. But once you look at both sides of the Braisa, you have to ask yourself the question, where's the starting point? Okay, this is literally a circular argument, meaning a hatava is rishus, or hara has to be rishus. Or hara has to be rishus, so therefore hatava. So, okay, that's great, but where does all this come from? So stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that question. But we still have a couple more parts of the Braisa. Yachol nishba lahara la'atzma v'lahara, yachol yei pater. Let's say a person decides that he's going to make a shvua that he's going to harm himself. Gemara Baba Kama discusses whether or not it's permitted to harm yourself. Interestingly, it's a machlokas. The Gemara in the 8th parak of Baba Kama has a debate whether or not one has the right and license in terms of whether he can harm himself. The halach is that you can't harm yourself. You're not allowed to harm yourself. One of the explanations in terms of why that is because you're not really the baal, you're not really the owner of your body. You're a custodian. You are charged to watch it. But it's not yours. It's not like bailus. It's not like, you own an object. You have every right to destroy the object in which you own, but you're not really the owner of your body. It could be one explanation. But in any event, the Gemara Baba Kama has a debate in terms of whether or not one is allowed to harm himself. Tosfos over here points out, we're going to be working with the position that you are allowed to harm yourself. I know that it's a strange shita. It's hard to explain, but okay. Maybe we could say that you do have bailus on yourself in any event. So we're working with the assumption right now that you do have the right to do so. So if you have the right to harm yourself, and now you make a shvur that you're going to harm yourself, so therefore what? So therefore, the shvur is going to be binding. This brisa clearly is working with the assumption, with the understanding that you are allowed to harm yourself. Therefore, since you are allowed to harm yourself, a shvur to that effect is going to be a binding shvur. What about harming others? No debate. You're not allowed to harm anybody else. Harming somebody else is nisr in the Torah. It's chovel. So tamalam la rao lehitiv. Ma tavarishus af harishus. Oh, it's inish malara lachem, balara shein harishus biyada. You do not have right, you do not have permission to harm anybody else. A shvur to that effect is obviously not going to work. Minayin l'rabos ha-tavas acherim. What about doing good for somebody else? I make a shvur that I'm going to do something else, do good for somebody else. Let's say, for example, my shvur is I'm going to gift him something. I swear I'm going to give him a gift. So is that going to be a binding shvur? If I don't comply with my shvur, am I going to be subject to a carbon olav yared? Tamalam or oleitiv? So the Torah says oleitiv. The oleitiv is the, as we'll see later in the Gemara, the O is a ribui, and it's coming to include a hatav, something which is good. So, and then the Braisa kind of spells it out. What would be an example in which I'm wanting to do harm to somebody else? So I say, I swear that I'm going to hit him, I'm going to crack open his skull. Okay, right? You hear that? A person's really upset. I swear I'm going to really hurt him. Okay, that's I don't know if this will calm him down, but, you know, you go over to the person, you simply say to the person, look, it's, you know, I'm sorry you're so upset with him, but you know that oath is not binding. Huh? I know. I also, right? Phil's asking the question. What do we gain from the example of the Braisa? The Braisa says, yeah. I was curious as well, right? Okay. Anyway, okay, fine. Period. Okay. So the ad kan divrei Braisa. So that is the end of the Braisa. So again, what did we just learn together in the Braisa? Most of it exclusionary. One thing which is inclusionary. What if we exclude in the Braisa? So we excluded a case of a person who is making a shvur to be mevatel sa mitzvah. That's excluded. That's case number one. Case number two of the Braisa, somebody makes a shvur that he's going to fulfill a mitzvah. That's also not a binding shvur. That's excluded from the parsha. Case number three of the Braisa, I make a shvur, I'm going to harm myself. Interestingly, the Braisa says that is a shvur. A person has a right to harm himself. Again, as I pointed out, debating the Gemara and Baba Kama, 8th Perek. But we're taking the position that one is allowed to harm themselves, therefore the shvur is binding. And finally, the fourth example of the Braisa, a shvur where a person wants to harm somebody else has no right to do so. It's an issur in the Torah, and therefore the shvur is not going to be binding. Ad kan divrei HaBraisa, but of course it only begs the question. As I pointed out in the beginning of the Braisa, in the first two cases of the Braisa was employing really a circular argument. The Gemara says, well, if Atav is Rishus, so therefore Ra is Rishus. And if Ra is Rishus, so therefore Atav is Rishus. But where's the starting point for it all? How do we know? So that's the Gemara's question. So we start with the Gemara. The Gemara begins right after the end of the Braisa, Umimai. Mimai is about two-thirds of the way down. The Gemara's the last word in the line. And the Gemara's question, really simple. Umimai dekrai b'dvar rishus k'sive. Dilma b'dvar mitzvah k'sive. Okay? Simple question. Where's the starting point where we know that the Torah is describing a dvar rishus, something which is optional? Right? I'm going to eat something or I'm not going to eat something. That's Dvar Rishus. Versus, I'm going to do this mitzvah, or I'm not going to do this mitzvah. How do I know? So, lo sakadaka debi'ina natavya dumya dahara. I'm sorry, lo sakadaka. So the Gemara says, debi'ina natavya dumya dahara. Vehara dumya dahatava, de'akish hara lahatava. So the Gemara says, look, in the psukim, lahara leitiv, since the two are found in the same, in the pasuk, so now what we have is a hekesh. I know that's in the afternoon shir, we've been discussing Hekesh extensively. So the Gemara says, here's an example where you have a Hekesh. And what is the Hekesh coming to teach us? Mahatava eina bebitol mitzvah, afara eina bebitol mitzvah. So just like when it comes to hatava, so it can't be through a bitol mitzvah. Meaning, as Rashi explains, look, let's say for example, meaning what's good and what's bad. So, okay, I understand it's not perfectly objective, but let's say I know what's good. Good is to eat something. Eating something is good. Okay. What makes it good? Right? Without food, we're not going to live. So, provides the necessary caloric intake. Okay, so eating is good. So if I point to a food and I say I'm going to eat it, that's tov. And I know I'm not saying this 100%, but it's objectively good. As opposed to abstention from eating. Abstention from eating, that's raw, that's bad. And again, without food, I'm not gonna survive. So that's something which is bad. But when it comes to mitzvos, so here we can really have a split decision in terms of what's good and what's bad. Right? We get to Pesach. So you know what? Pesach is coming, so I'm not gonna eat. So I'm not gonna eat matzah. So not eating matzah, so on one hand, that's bad, but on the other hand, that's not the best example. Let's start like this. I'm going to eat chametz on Pesach. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to eat chametz on Pesach. So on one hand, it's good because eating is good. On the other hand, it's chametz on Pesach. So it's bad for my soul. So here's something which is good for the good, but bad for the neshama. So in other words, by virtue of the fact that the Torah puts together in the same pasuk hatavan ra'ah, so they are reflective of one another in it that they have to be objectively either good or either bad. Once you do something which is both a combination of good and bad, like eating chametz on Pesach, so then it's a combination of the two. So v'hara dumi atava da'akishar al atava ma hatava eina bebitul mitzvah af hara eina bebitul mitzvah hara gufa hatava hi, because that bad turns into something which can be good. V'akish hatava l'ara, mahara ain't a b'kiyah mitzvah, af hatava ain't a b'kiyah mitzvah, hatava gufa harahi. So okay, so the Gemara basically saying that when we're including mitzvos, so now it can come into a scenario where the good can become bad, and bad can become good. Let's another simple example, right? Where how could the bad be good? Be good? I make a declaration on Yom Kippur, I'm not going to eat. Again, not eating is a bad thing. Not eating on Yom Kippur, well, that's a good thing. So, again, once we're introducing mitzvahs into the discussion, so you have something now where it no longer is objectively either good or bad. Okay. So this is the argument of the Gemara, where since Hatava and Harara are placed in the same pasuk side by side, so it has to be objective. Either all good, either all bad. Once mitzvahs and averes come into the discussion, you can have a split. So the Gemara says, Iyach b'davar shus nami lamishkachala, nami lamishkachala. And then the Gemara says, well, if that's true, even when it's the Dvar Rishos. And the Gemara does not explicate, but Rashi does. By Dvar Rishos, I can also have a split decision, right? Rashi doesn't give this example, but I know it's very popular now to give such an example. Let's say a person's overweight. Okay. And a person's overweight, and he says, you know, I'm going to eat this. Well, yeah, but you know, you already ate enough. And you don't need to eat anymore. So that's something where, even as a Dvar Rishus, meaning it's no mitzvah involved, it's just eating. So, but there, it's something which can be both good and bad. Also, I mean, this is more like Rashi's example. Let's say you decide to eat something that is not good for you, right? It's kashul aguf. So there, it can be a shvur to eat, but at the same time, contained there within, it's also bad for you. So in other words, even if the discussion is revolving not a mitzvah, not an issur, but a simple dvar rishus, still something can be objectively a combination of both good and bad. So the Gemara says, Ella, so fine. So the Gemara says, all right. So we're going to have to leave the Hekesh. The Hekesh argument in of itself is not going to be a good enough argument to make the determination that the Torah is talking only about divrei harishus, and it's not talking about Dvar Mitzvah. So, Elamid Dir Itzrech O the Rabbah Satavas Acherim. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's now our new argument. Our new argument is going to be based on the following. The Torah has the word O, right? Lahara O Lehetiv. Now, the O is a ribuy. It comes to include. What is it coming to include? So, it's coming to include Atavas Acherim, doing something good for somebody else. So, Shema Minah B'Dvar Rishos Ksive. So the Gemara says, that's how I know that's talking about Dvar Rishos. Why? Follow the argument of the Gemara. Because if the Torah's inclusion was a Dvar Mitzvah, Hashta Haras Acherim Israbe, Hatavis Acherim Ibaye, because if, let's say, the baseline of All the Shavuos in this particular Pasuk is not only talking about Dvar Rishos, but it's also talking about Dvar Mitzvah. And when I say Dvar Mitzvah, I also mean Dvar Avera. So what's already included? If it was talking about Dvar Rishos, if it was talking about Dvar Mitzvah and Dvar Avera, so that means, would a Shavua be binding where I could harm somebody else? If the Psukim were including Mitzvah as Mitzvahs and Averas, the answer would be yes. Meaning, I can make a shvua that I'm going to harm somebody else. If that's true, then do I need the O to come to include doing something good for somebody else? No. Because if I can already make a shvua to harm somebody else, so I for sure can make a shvua to do good to somebody else. By virtue of the fact that the Torah has to give the ribui of O to include doing something good for somebody else, it must be that the starting point of the psukim is that it's not talking about a vera, it's not talking about a mitzvah. Okay. So if you understood the argument, great. It means I did an okay job explaining it. But in other words, the new argument of the Gemara leaves the world of Hekesh. Hekesh is not going to be good enough. So now the new argument of the Gemara is that the O is a ribui. The O is coming to include doing something good for somebody else. And just one more time. The argument is that if Dvar Mitzvah and Dvar Avera are already on the table, so then I don't need the O, I don't need the Ribui. If I can harm somebody, I for sure could do something good for somebody. By virtue of the fact that we have a special Ribui of O to tell me that I could do good for somebody else, it must mean that a doing harm is not in the discussion. So that means that we're not talking about Dvar Mitzvah and Dvar Avera, we're only talking about Dvar Arishos. Okay. Now the Gemara says that's very good if the O is available for a drasha. V'hai O mi baile lechalik. So the Gemara says, but don't I need the O to be mechalik? So in other words, we know that when the Torah gives a list of things, here it's a list of two, but when the Torah gives a list of things, lahara O lehetiv. If we didn't have the word O over there, so what would I think? I would think that in order for a shvu to be binding, it has to be La Ra and Lehetiv. It has to be both. The O is coming to tell me that no, that a Shavua is going to be binding if it's one or the other. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? I don't need the word O to be Mechalik. So the Gemara says, wait one second. This is a Machlokas Tanaim that we see time and again throughout Shas. A often quoted Gemara. So the Gemara says, "Hanichal Rav Yonasan el Rav Yoshia ma'ikal ameimar." Gemara says that works out very well according to Rav Yonasan, but not according to Rav Yoshia. Did Tanya? Ish isha sheikalos aviv esimo. A person curses either his mother or his father. Now, the way I explain the pasuk is or his mother or his father. Ainli ala aviv imo aviv elo imo imo velo aviv meinayin. Now the Torah has the vav connecting the two. The vav could be understood as either the conjunction and, or the conjunction or. How do I know that it could be or? How do I know that it could be either? Tamalamar, Aviv Imo Kilel, Aviv Kilel, Imo Kilel, Div Rav Yoshia. So Rav Yoshia says it's based on the fact that the Torah goes on to give another expression. Meaning, I'll read the pasuk inside. Ki ish ish asher, yikalel es aviv es imo, mos yumas, aviv vi imo, kilel damav bo. So according to Rabbi Yoshia, by virtue of the fact that we have that second expression in the Pasuk, first it says, Yikalel es aviv. The word aviv is connected to the word kilel. In the second phrase of the Pasuk, it says, Vi'imo kilel. Taking the word kilel and putting it next to your mother. So that, says Rabbi Yoshia, is the source that it's either or. Rabbi Yonasan says, you don't have to be that fancy. Rabbi Yonasan omer, mashma shneim ke'echad, mashma echad b'fnei atzmo. When the Torah gives a listing, I don't assume that it has to be both. My assumption is going into any pasuk is that it's either ad, top of the next amud, shifro lecha kasev yachtav, unless the Torah goes out of its way to say that it's together. Right? Semer upishtim. He doesn't put the pasuk over here. Right? I know it's about shanes. Right? So according to Rabbi Yonasan, it's only until the Torah says Beferish Yachdav. So then and only then do we assume that it's together. Otherwise, it's either or. So What comes out now? That according to Rabbi Yonasan, whenever the Torah has a list of things, unless the Torah goes out of its way to say yachtav, I assume it's either or. So now, according to Rabbi Yonasan, the pasuk works out very good. Lahara o leitiv. I don't need the word o. Lahara leitiv, even if I had the vav, it wouldn't mean either good or bad. So according to Rabbi Yonasan, it's very good. But according to Rabbi Yoshia, I need the word o. Without the word o, it would come out that the only binding shvuah would be one which is both good and bad. So the Gemara says, "Afilu tamer Rabbi Yoshia, v'savala k'Rabbi Kiva d'darsh ribu emiut." So the Gemara says, "Okay, I can even say that the price is going like Rabbi Yoshia, and we'll go. We'll say like this: Rabbi Yoshia subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva, that we just went over a couple days ago, says that how do we darshan the pesukim? We use the methodology of ribu emiut, as we discussed just a short couple days ago. What does ribu emiut come to teach me? It teaches me that it is." That we start off with the ribui of, it includes all shvuos, and the miyut now just tells me that it cuts out just a little bit. When we say it cuts out just a little bit, well, what is it cutting out? E amar b'shama b'dvar reshuk siv memai dvar mitzvah. So, if we're saying that the psukim are talking about a dvar reshuk, so what is it coming out? It's coming out dvar mitzvah. Ela e amar b'dvar mitzvah siv memai kamemai. But if the Torah includes the Dvar Mitzvah, so then what would it be Memai? Meaning that the Miut has to come exclude something from the world of Shvuos. If what it was covering was Rishus, and the only thing was cutting out is the Mitzvah, great. So then I understand the Miut. But if Rav Yoshia subscribes to the idea that it's not cutting out a Dvar Mitzvah, well, if it's not cutting out a Dvar Mitzvah, so then what is it cutting out? Meaning, there's nothing left then to cut out. Meaning, if the first thing to go of all the world of Shavuos would be a Dvar Mitzvah, and if you're not ready to cut that out, so then what do we gain then by the miut of Lahara Oleitiv? So therefore, it must be that what he's cutting out is a Dvar Mitzvah. Okay, so where do we stand on all this? So far, we really only learned one point today, but it's an important one, and we learned it through the Mishnah. We learned it through the Brisa. A shvuah that's going on a mitzvah is not going to be chal. And again, when I say not going to be chal, I mean vis-a-vis shvuah's bitui. Meaning that a person is not bound as a shvuah's bitui, that he's either going to comply with the mitzvah or he's going to violate an aver in the Torah. Such a shvuah does not have a chalos shvuah's bitui. Therefore, if he violates the shvuah, he's not going to be eligible to bringing a carbon olav yared. How do we know that? So according to the Mishnah, it's based on the fact that it's not flippable. According to the Brisa, it's seemingly, according to the Brisa, it's based on the fact of a Hekesh. Although as the Gemara went through the Hekesh, the Gemara did not love the Hekesh. Then the Brisa said it could be based on the ribui of O. And then the argument was, is that if we're talking about only Dvar Rishus, I understand the ribui. If we're talking about a Dvar Mitzvah, I don't understand the ribui. That then the Gemara launched into the discussion of, well, that assumes that the O is extra. What if the O is not extra? What do you then say? And then the Gemara tried to fit in both Tanaim, both Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan, in this discussion of whether O is extra or it's not extra. Okay. And finally, just to finish up the sugya, I'm Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, ma ima rishus, etc. Rabbanan shaper kamer leila Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Again, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra and our Mishnah took the argument of course the Torah is including a Dvar Mitzvah as a shvuah, because consider, says Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, the following argument. If you're bound by a Dvar Rishus, you're certainly going to be bound by a shvuah on a mitzvah anyway, you're obligated to do so. That was the argument of Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. And the Chachamim's counter-argument is really simple. How could you say that? You can't flip around the shvuah, meaning in order for a shvuah to be chal, it has to be able, you have to be able to say it in the positive and the negative. The positive, I'm going to eat matzah on Seder night. What's the negative? I'm not going to eat matzah? You can't make such a statement. So shapir ka'amar ka'amar le'le Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. So they say very good to Rav Yehuda ben Becerra. What would be his counter argument? The Gemara goes through it. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra am lecha atu atafas acherim lav afagav deleisa bechlal haras acherim v'rabbi rachmana hachanami b'kiyum mitzvah afagav deleisa b'bitul mitzvah rabbi rachmana. So he says, well, remember what we just learned a moment ago? The O in the pasuk la'ra o le'tiv, the O is a ribui. What's the ribui? Ribui is if I make a shvuah that I'm going to do something good for somebody else, that will be a binding shvuah. So Rav Yehuda ben Becerra says, okay, now that we have that halacha in hand, consider. Can I say the opposite of that? Can I say, the shvua that's binding is I'm going to do something good for somebody. Now, can I say, okay, now I'm going to do something bad to somebody? You can't do that. So, Rav Yehuda ben Becerra's counter-argument to the Chachamim is, you think every shvua is really reversible? It's not true. The shvua of I'm going to do good to somebody, which is a ribu, it's merubah in now, the halachas of shvuas, is not reversible. Okay. And meanwhile, you and I both agree that such a shvua would be a binding shvua, even though it's not a reversible shvua. Okay. And so now you're so bothered by a shvua sa mitzvah. I'm making a shvua that I'm going to eat matzah on Pesach. It's not reversible? Okay, so what? Doesn't have to be reversible. V'rabanan, ha'sam isa below etiv, ha'chim isa below akayem. And the Chacham's counter argument is, what do you mean it's not reversible? Of course it's reversible. What is the opposite of, I'm going to do good for somebody? Right. So the opposite is, I'm not going to do good for somebody. As opposed to, I'm going to eat matzah. What's the opposite of I'm going to eat matzah? I'm not going to eat matzah. Right? There's no middle ground. Meaning, either you're going to eat or you're not going to eat. So not eating matzah on Seder night, that's an Aveira. So it's not reversible. As opposed to, I'm going to do good for somebody, the I'm not going to do good, that's the opposite. So the Chachamim's counter-argument is simply, the entire construction of your argument is a flawed argument. Okay. Akan, that takes us through the first sugya of today. In the Mishnah, we've just learned together that a shvuas bitui does not apply to a mitzvah. Even if your shvuas bitui is I'm going to fulfill the mitzvah, it does not have a chalos, it does not take effect. Your shvuas bitui is not going to be a shvuah. Again, as I pointed out at the beginning of the shiur today, it may fall under the category of a shvuah shav, maybe. Again, the Rishonim discussed it. But certainly as far as the shvuas bitui is concerned, it does not take effect. When the Torah introduces us to shvuas bitui in the fifth parak of Vayikra, it's only on a dvar rishos, either lahara or leitiv. And the only thing that is included on top of that is only a shvuah to be meitiv somebody else, to do something good for somebody else. But other than that, the shvuas on a mitzvah is going to not be chal. Nor is the shvuah on a vera. Okay. Next Mishnah, we are in the middle of Chavzayin Amid Beis. Shvuah shalo ochel, kikar zeh. Shvuah shalo ochlena. Shvuah shalo ochlena. So a person now seems to be going into a loop. I'm not going to eat that bread. Followed with, I'm not going to eat it. Followed with, I'm not going to eat it. Okay. He's trying to diet. It's hard. It's not easy. Food's delicious. So he makes a compound shvuah, not once, not twice, but even a third time. And now, you know what's going to happen. V'achla. And he goes ahead and he eats it. Ein ochayiv ela achas. So how many shvuahs did he violate? The first one. Not the second one, not the third one. Zui shvuahs bitu shechayav v'nazdona makos v'ashigagaso karban ola v'yore. This is an example. Remember earlier in the Masechta we talked about this line of the Mishnah? This is an example where you would be chayiv on if I intentionally violated it makos. In other words, this is a shvuah sheker, and al shegagaso karban olav yared. And if you forgot about your shvuah and you ate the loaf of bread, so you're going to be chayiv a karban olav yared. Shvuah shav chayiv nas dona makos al shegagaso pater. On the other hand, contrast that with the shvuah shav. If a person makes a shvuah shav, examples upcoming in the Mishnayos. So under those circumstances, a deliberate violation of that issue in the Torah, so that comes with a makos. And as we already pointed out early in the Masechta, but we get to say it now again, even though it's a lav shein ba maisa, meaning it's verbal, it's nothing more than verbal, it's a verbalization, and generally speaking throughout halacha, you do not receive makos for a lav shein ba maisa. This is a notable exception, that you're going to receive makos for deliberately violating this issue in the Torah of making a shvuah shav. However, is there a carbon? No. No carbon olav yared. Carbon olav yared is only for a shvuas bitui, not for a shvuas shav.
You need a Mishnah to tell you if you repeat something 3 times, you're not
going to
be
tied. Yeah. In other words, without the Mishnah, every shvuah is going to be binding.
It's the same thing.
Okay, you're repeating. Okay,
somebody else, the first
time it's already out, sir. It's right, ein eser chal al eser. So stay tuned, Danny. In just a moment, we're going to see that if I just adjusted the phraseology, the formulation, you're going to see that maybe the second shvuah is going to be chal, right? For reasons which we don't know yet, but in just a moment you'll see. So the Gemara's question, opening question, why do I need this example? So, and also, you read the Mishnah carefully. Look at the formulation. And now it's similar, but it's not exactly the same. The verb is conjugated ochel. The second time, it's lo ochlenna. Now, I would have said, okay, this is the same basic idea. And even the third round of lo ochlenna, same basic idea. But the Gemara says no. Actually, the lashon of the Mishnah is extraordinarily meduyak. In fact, the Gemara goes on to say, if you flipped around the language of that Mishnah, you watch what happens. See the Gemara inside. Lama le Mishnah shavu shlo ochel shavu shlo ochlenna kamash malan. Taima da'amar shlo ochel v'hadamar shlo ochlenna. Da'lam echai v'lachada. In the way that the Mishnah presents itself, where I open up with the words lo ochel, follow within lo ochlenna, so such a, the second and tertiary shvua is not going to be binding. Ava amar shlo ochlenna. But let's say the opening shvua is I will not eat it. And hada amar shlo ochel, follow then by a shvua shlo ochel, mechayev tarte. Under those circumstances, I am going to be chayev two karbanos. Why? Kidderav damarava. Shvua shlo ochel kikar zeh, keva sha'achel mimenu kizayis, chayev. When I say shvua shlo ochel, how much of it the bread do I have to eat in order to be chayev? The answer, of course, is a kizayis. Now, remember, again, another healthy reminder, we had a machlokas between the Chacham and Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Akiva, when you say lo ochel, it means even a kol shehu. Okay. We don't all like Rabbi Akiva. And that's not the accepted halacha, but the accepted, right, it's not accepted shita. But nevertheless, though, you do have to eat a kezayis. So when you say the word lo ochel, so you're bound not to eat a kezayis of it. Lo ochlena, what does the word lo ochlena mean? It means I won't eat it. Meaning, until you eat the whole loaf of bread, you do not violate your shvua. And ochayv ashi ochel is kula. Ah, very good. So now, let's consider. When I say the words lo ochel, at what point do I violate my shvua? Just the kezayis of the bread. So that means now that, of course, once you eat a kezayis, you're going to be chayev. Certainly, eating the whole thing is included in that as well. But if the opening shvua was lo ochlena, when do you violate your shvua? Only when I eat the whole thing. So when I then follow up with the second shvua of lo ochel, it is mosif. It's coming to add. Because now, not only am I going to be chayv if I eat the whole loaf of bread, I'm also going to be chayv even if I eat a kezayis of it. Oh, very good. So in other words, the Mishnah over here formulated itself very carefully so that, now, why did the Mishnah spell out this halacha? You know, the Mishnah, obviously the Mishnah is not there to teach us everything, meaning when Rav Yehuda Anasi wrote the Mishnayos, he encrypted halacha in the Mishnayos, meaning the design was not to spell everything out, but that we do these types of critical readings so that we extract these kinds of halachas. And now what we're extracting from the Mishnah is that if the formulation would have been reversed, in that it was first lo ochlena, followed then by lo ochel, so then the second shvua is going to be binding on top of the first shvua, because the second shvua is going to be most of it's going to add. Next.
So it's possible that he's excited, he may not eat the whole.
Right, so right. Right, correct. Shvua shlo ochlen ve ochel enuchai ve alachas. Hasu lamali. So the Gemara says, what more do we gain by these examples in the Mishnah? And why in the Mishnah are we giving not only a secondary shvua but a tertiary shvua as well? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, there's a lot to learn from this Mishnah. Because the Mishnah is only talking about a patur karban. Meaning, what do we have over here? What the Gemara is telling us is that we have over here is latent shvuas. The first shvua is, if you make your first shvua, then I'm not going to eat it. You make a secondary shvua and a tertiary shvua. So you know what the secondary and tertiary shvua are? They are simply not chayav for those shvuas. Meaning that I'm not going to be bound by those shvuas in that I'm not going to bring a karban for those shvuas if I, in fact, do we eat the bread in a state of shogeg. But you know what they are? They're there. They're latent. And if let's say, for example, the first Shavua were to be absolved, were to be expunged, so then the second Shavua would be chal. And if the second Shavua would be expunged, the third Shavua would be chal. The e mashkachas ravcha chayol. If there was any opening there, right now there's no room for the second Shavua. There's no room for the third Shavua. But had there been an opening, so then you would be chayav for the second and for the third Shavua as well. Lamai hil chasal lechadrava. Da'ama rava. Im nishal avishon al taloshnia. Tachta. That if, let's say, there was a she'ela on the first Shavua, and the person would be released from the first Shavua, so the second Shavua would be chal. Okay, very good. So the Gemara says that the reason why the Mishnah chose to give examples of secondary and even tertiary Shavua is to come and teach me that in the event that a person asks a she'ela on the first Shavua, the second Shavua is going to be chal, third Shavua is going to be chal. Ah. Gemara says, Lema Misayele. Gemara says, you know what? Now that we learned this halach in our Mishnah, this would seem to be a wonderful support for that. Mishnah, the basin zero, Zuman Rishona, Vifashalai, Karban Vachakach, Nishal Rishona. Person made a double naziris. Okay, he got really spiritually motivated one morning, wakes up, says, you know what? I'm going to be a nazir. And not only do I take on one naziris, I take on two naziris, two different naziris. Okay, some naziris is for 30 days. So now he's bound to go through a nazir, a one period of naziris, followed with the karbanos at the end of it, and then a second naziris followed with the karbanos at the end of it. Okay. Fine. So now he's on double duty in the zeros, and obviously they can't overlap. Meaning that as he's counting his first 30 days for his first Naziros, they can't double dip those days. You can't say this will be for my first Naziros and for my second Naziros. Obviously he has to do them consecutive, not concurrently. Fine. What happens? What happens as he gets to the end of his first Naziros, he finishes counting all 30 days, does them successfully, doesn't become Tamei. Everything's good. Not only that, mafrish karbanos. After having counted the first 30 days, he then sets aside his karbanos, which were then going to be applied for his first naziris. And then he goes to Talmid Chacham and says, look, I know I made a double naziris, but hear me out. The first naziris that I made assuming X, Y, and Z. I didn't know about a couple of other factors. Can you release me from my first naziris? In other words, okay, it's lema freya. It's going to be retroactively annulled. Okay, so he goes to a chacham and he wants to release from it, and the chacham hears it, and there is a pesach, and so the chacham releases him from his first naziris. Okay, great. I got released right now from my first naziris. But you know what? I did count 30 days. And I, even though when I counted each one of those 30 days, I had in mind my first naziris. But now, can I substitute? Can I now plug in my second naziris on all those days that were counted? So this is what we're learning now in the Braisa. Misha done the base naziris. Uman arishon v'ifrishalai karban v'acharkach nishal arishona al toloshnia v'rishona. So you can swap in your second naziris to all those days you counted. So what do we have over here? Seemingly now the same exact halacha, just taught by naziris as opposed to a shvua, where he had a double naziris. He had two sentences, if you will, that he had. Sentences can be whatever. That terrible analogy. Okay, so the okay, whatever. he had two naziris that he had to fulfill, and even though he cannot do them concurrently, but in the event where he counted the days and he got out of the first naziris through a she'elas chacham, so what he can now do is he could take those days and sub in the second naziris into the first naziris. Similar to the Gemara thinks now, it's a great comparison. Similar to the double shvua. A person makes a shvua that he's not going to eat bread. He makes a second shvua that he's not going to eat it. What we learned in the Mishnah is that there's no chiyuv on the second shvua, but it's there in waiting. In the event that if the first shvua gets removed, second shvua now is going to be chal. Okay, seemingly a perfect comparison. Hachi ashta.
So
okay, so it sounds like it's a he could just swap. So swap the whole thing in. Sounds that way. Hachi ashta. So the Gemara says the comparison is not a perfect comparison. Because Hasam Nazirus Mia Isa. So ha dechi manu l'rishona by mehadim emanu l'shnia below she'ela. So the Gemara says, I don't think the comparison is a great comparison, because consider that second Nazirus, it's there. It's not latent. It's there. Meaning, after he finishes his first Nazirus, he's going to have to count his second Nazirus. So you want to talk about latent Nazirus? It's not latent. It's there. So over and only because he got out of his first Nazirus, he's able to take his second Nazirus and plug it into his first, because the second Nazirus is not something that's just in the sky. It's not ethereal. It's there. He's going to have to serve that one as well. So in that scenario, I can make the argument that the second Nazirus can now substitute the first Nazirus, because it's not something which is latent and waiting in the wings. It's just that, practically speaking, I can't count the two Nazirus at the same time. But it's there. However, over here, But over here, I don't know. Meaning, maybe the argument could be over here that there's no second shvuah at all. Meaning, I know you wanted to be medayik in the Mishnah that there's no carbon on the second shvuah. But the truth of the matter is, maybe the argument goes much stronger. Maybe the argument of the Mishnah is, not that there's no carbon on the second Shavuah, but mamish, there's no chalo second Shavuah. Once there's Shavuah, is I'm not allowed to eat this piece of bread, so that's it. That bread now is also to me. A second Shavuah simply has no chalos whatsoever. No effectiveness at all. So even though I agree with you with the halacha regarding Nazir, but that doesn't necessarily reflect on our halacha regarding the second Shavuah. Adkan, we'll stop over here. We'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Let's quickly recap. The Amud Aleph and part of Amud Beis taught us about making a shvuah on a mitzvah. On either side, on fulfilling a mitzvah, on going against the mitzvah, on not doing an avera, on violating an avera, in all those circumstances, there's no carbon olav yored. The pasuk in Vayikra, Perikei, is only talking about shvuah of reshus, not shvuah of mitzvah. How do we know that? That's where it gets complicated. It could be built on a hekesh. It could be built on the argument of the inclusion of the O to include hatavas acherim. However, it could be that in order for a shvuah to be chal, it has to be reversible, both in the negative and in the positive. Okay. Multiple arguments that arrive at the conclusion, but the conclusion is sound. That's the conclusion of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. Machlok is in the Mishnah between Rav Yehuda ben Becerra and the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra does include a Shvuah where the Shvuah is to be Mekayim es a Mitzvah. The Chachamim disagree. And again, based on the Mishnah's argument, it's because it's not reversible. Hatavas Acherim is also not reversible. The Gemara says, no, it is reversible. Hatavas Acherim means I'm going to do something good for somebody else. The opposite of that would just simply be, I'm not going to do good. That portion is in fact reversible. And then we learned our second Mishnah of the day, Chav Zayin Amud Beis. The Mishnah talked about compound Shavuos. I make a Shavuah followed by a second and a tertiary Shavuah. Second and the third are not going to be Chal. And what we just finished discussing is, what does that mean it's not going to be Chal? Meaning, is it latent? And in the event that the first Shavuah is removed, it will come down and apply? Or does that mean it's not Chal at all? And even though we seemingly brought a great proof from Nazirus, because in the case where Nazirus, that person makes a double Nazirus, and he gets out of the first, he could swap the second into the first, and even though we all agree to that, but the Gemara says, but that may be fundamentally different, because there, the second Nazirus is not latent, it exists, it's just that I can't count them concurrently. So the second one can come into the first, Masha'en Kain, by the second Shavuah, by the third Shavuah, it could be that there's no chalos whatsoever.